keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso. Dope so, no overdose. Cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Thank you all for tuning in, and I'm really happy to be back, as always, broadcasting live from somewhere in Southern California. I don't want to be too specific, because you know, I never know who's listening out there. Just kidding. Anyway, got a bunch of stuff to cover from over the weekend. As always, all the political stuff going on. We're going to talk a little bit about this viral photo that is just completely heartbreaking that came out of Syria, out of Aleppo, which is basically the Stalingrad of the Syrian revolution / civil war / NATO-Russia proxy war, whatever you want to call it. This thing is turning into a huge mess. We're going to talk all about that tonight. But we're going to have a couple interesting guests. We're going to be taking some calls. And if you miss any of our shows, then you can go back and listen to us on UCY-TV's YouTube channel and listen to all of our old shows, all of our old archives. We've been going at it now for several years, I think like 3 years, I'm losing track, but Monday through Friday here at the same place, same time, and you know, we very rarely take days off, but you know, every once in a while. But you know, I'm here Monday and Wednesday with my co-host DB Schwartz and a bunch of our awesome guest panelists and callers and stuff. SM Gibson is on Tuesdays and Thursdays. He's got a really popular show. I think he gets more listeners than we do because it's, I don't know, more exciting. I guess our stuff is just really deep, and I guess it can be a little depressing at times. But, you know, the way I look at it, it's really important to talk about this really tough to digest or, you know, just really rough information. And because it is kind of, in a way, it's positive, because even though it's such depressing information and it's such bad news, it's positive because the more people find out about this, the more they can make better choices in the future, where they spend their money, how they cast their votes, how they support their governments, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The more well-informed you are, even if it's information that isn't happy news and uplifting, the more equipped you are to make better decisions. You know, and I've even had people tell me that they get investing ideas from listening to our show and stuff, you know, and not that I'm going to recommend, because I'm not a financial expert or anything like that, but you know, that kind of stuff happens too, because we talk about these geopolitical events, world events going on, taking a deeper look at the trends and the undertones and the underlying causes behind all these conflicts and stuff. That's one of the big problems with the mainstream media. It's so topical. It's like, oh, you know, we have to bomb Syria because their president's a bad guy without going back and looking at the real deeper issues going on, whether it's gas pipelines, geopolitics, proxy wars, you know, who are the players involved. I mean, this is all the stuff that we kind of break down here at the Anti-Media, so you get a much better, clearer picture of the really complicated issues going on throughout the world. Anyway, that being said, let me introduce our panel. We've got our original panel back together tonight. I'm really excited about this. Got my longtime co-host on the line, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Not a lot, Nick. Just super busy like usual around this time of year. But yeah, man, I haven't really even been keeping up to date. It seems like the circus has quieted down a little bit. I haven't heard too many things coming out that are making their way through the ether.
Yeah, political news has cooled off a little bit. Donald Trump seems to have backed off his ridiculousness, and he's quote-unquote rebooting his campaign, and now he's reading off the teleprompter, kind of, you know, the same exact thing that he used to criticize Obama and all the other politicians for. Now Trump is kind of resigned to reading off the teleprompter just because, you know, we see what happens when he speaks off the cuff, whether he's doing it on accident or if he's, like, purposely trying to sabotage. He says a bunch of stupid shit that gets him in trouble. So now he's just reading boring speeches off the teleprompter, and that's kind of where the Trump campaign is at. And, you know, I guess that's going to be his new strategy to regain some ground, to tie Clinton again, because Clinton has been leading ever since the political conventions got done with. Clinton had a huge bump. Trump just kept eating shit over and over again, and that's what led a lot of people to start thinking, like, maybe this guy's purposely sabotaging his campaign. I mean, you know, so, you know, we don't know what's really going on there, whether Trump is actually trying to lose or whether he's just that stupid that he just gaffe after gaffe after gaffe. Either way, now he's hired the former CEO of Fox News, who was just forced out by Rupert Murdoch because of several things, but mainly sexual harassment allegations that we know of. And so this guy had to step out of Fox News, and Trump hired him. So he's going to be advising Trump. And, you know, this guy is a master propagandist, so who knows how that's going to play out and how that's going to work out. Trump also brought on a guy from Breitbart as well. Breitbart, the very hard alt-right type of news outlet, very anti-Islam, you know, anti-Islam, anti-immigrant. They're pretty much everything that's bad that has come to represent the Tea Party. That's what Breitbart has become. Breitbart.com. It's a controversial right-wing news outlet that, for the most part, spews a bunch of vitriolic, xenophobic type of demagoguery. But every now and then they do have some decent investigations. They get their hands on some exclusive documentation about certain right-wing and left-wing political people and stuff like that, mainly focusing on Hillary Clinton. You know, so it is a good site to look at if you're looking for dirt on Hillary Clinton. If you're looking for anything about Trump, I mean, Breitbart has been pretty openly in the pocket of Donald Trump, so they're not going to see anything negative there about Trump. But that's, you know, the happenings going on. There's still a bunch of chatter regarding Hillary Clinton's health situation, and you know, we're gonna have to see how that plays out in the next couple weeks. We don't really know what's gonna happen there. That being said, let me introduce the rest of our panel. We've got Jake Anderson, one of our awesome journalists, on the line. What's up, Jake?
Not much. So what are we gonna have to do to get more listeners than you know,
SM Gibson?
Yeah. Are we gonna? Should we make some clown noises? Should we maybe bring in some animal guests? Our animal expert people.
I was trying to get a hold of Harambe's publicist. I hear the ghost of Harambe is going around making appearances. So I'm sure that would boost us up a little bit. I don't know, maybe some more yelling and screaming and stuff. I do that every now and then, but maybe not enough.
Yeah, I guess we need to get more vitriolic. Me and DB need to argue more, I think.
There you go. People love arguments.
Yeah. Other than that, not much is new here. Yeah, it's pretty quiet. It's quiet before the storm. Just a bunch of stupid conspiracy theories out there. New book is out about Trump, just kind of about how he's really just building this brand right now. And you know, a couple years ago, my friend pointed out, you know, a single decision by McCain made it so now we have to deal with Sarah Palin for the rest of our lives. You know, if they had never made Sarah Palin the VP, we would never ever have had to listen to her. And now it's the same with Trump. There's kind of, I mean, a different situation, but because of his meteoric rise, which was completely unprecedented and unexpected, now we're going to have to be dealing with Trump for the rest of our lives, and not even when he dies, because he's like, you know, he's 70, he's older than people would think.
Thank God, we only have to deal with him for another 20 years or more.
Well, his entire movement, well, yeah, he'll probably live forever, actually, but his movement now, this Trump movement, this alt-right, hard nationalistic, you know, basically white nationalism movement, is very entrenched now, and they're not going anywhere.
It's kind of like the neo Tea Party, really. The Tea Party really finally found someone to, you know, get infatuated with at the presidential level.
Yeah, I'm blown away by InfoWars and Alex Jones. I'm just seriously just blown away at how hard into Trump they've gone, and how much of an alternate universe they are. If you compare InfoWars and Huffington Post side by side on a daily basis, you'll seriously feel like you're in the Matrix. It's just like left propaganda versus alt-left propaganda versus alt-right propaganda. It's insane.
Don't forget that Alex Jones has the support of the corpse of Ronald Reagan because of Roger Stone.
Right.
Oh, man. We're also joined tonight by Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's up?
Hanging in there. It's been a while since you've been on the show. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to, what have you been writing about, and otherwise, what's going on?
I'm just following what's going on, particularly in Syria now, because Syria has kind of become ground zero, almost, for potential world war. Very close second to that would be the South and East China Sea, and then, of course, Ukraine is now heating up, too. So all of that's going on, and we're distracted by so many things, like this election, that really are of no consequence when, you know, all this kind of posturing and saber-rattling for war really could get everybody in trouble. So I think it's important that we kind of, like, pay attention to that.
That really is a big story that not enough people are talking about, is this major escalation of the Cold War 2.0, which is basically what it's been for the last about 5 years or so. It's been Cold War 2.0, and it's very close to becoming Hot War 3.0, World War III type stuff, and I don't want to jump the gun and just, you know, call it World War III. And I think we talked about this last show a little bit. When a big giant war pops off, like, how soon do you start calling it World War II? I mean, when did they start calling it World War II? I don't think it was initially called that. But, you know, I guess when these things get big enough, they just start referring to them as a world war. But, you know, major geopolitical positioning going on between the NATO alliance and what has been dubbed, I think Time magazine recently called it, the axis of evil, right? Which is Russia, China, and Iran, and to a lesser extent, North Korea, and all of the proxies that are involved. You know, the mainstream media is now basically drawing up the battle lines, calling them the axis of evil. Because obviously our empire can do no wrong, apparently.
Of course not.
But this war is quickly heating up, and this is something that's going to be something that we haven't seen at this kind of scale in a really, really long time, well, since World War II. Because China is just a massive, massive country. I was talking with someone the other day about, like, the most widely used languages, and I was looking it up, and the language they speak in China, there's like over a billion people that speak that language. It's almost double the amount of people that speak English. So I mean, China alone is just a force that is massive. That's like almost, you can't even really imagine it the amount of people that they have over there, it's hard to imagine, I guess. They've got like four or five times more people than they than the United States has. And I mean, when looking at it from just a numbers standpoint, I think China, if it really had to, could probably raise an army of men that are capable of fighting that is actually just their army alone could be bigger than the population of the United States. So I mean, this is something very, very troubling when you look at the whole geopolitical thing. And you know, the U.S. continues prodding and prodding. And recently, Claire, can you tell us about what's going on in the South China Sea with all these naval exercises? The U.S. is really kind of prodding China over there, right off their coast, you know, in the South China Sea.
And North Korea.
And China's getting really on edge about what we're doing over there.
Yeah, and so is North Korea. And the thing is, China and Russia kind of have each other's backs. So really, I mean, as if it weren't bad enough that NATO and the U.S. is kind of poking the dragon of Russia around its borders by, you know, having all these drills and deploying forces to supposedly kind of guard their allies. So you have that front, but then in the South China Sea, this is a long-standing dispute over these island, various islands and archipelagos in the South and East China Sea. And the U.S. really just wants to be able to protect the lines of commerce, because so much commerce, so much of the world's commerce travels through that area. So the U.S. is there protecting its own interests in the guise of protecting, you know, South Korea and other allies there. But China is taking it as an outright aggressive, you know, show of force. And North Korea isn't far behind in that stance. And both have agreed or have said as much that they would be willing to initiate preemptive nuclear strikes against the U.S. forces there if it continues to kind of prod the situation and provoke, you know, whatever, all these hostilities. So it's a really volatile situation, and people tend to, I think, underestimate the willingness of China, or North Korea for that matter, to actually act on those threats. But I think that that's kind of, I think that that would be a terrible wrong. I think that they would act. I really do. North Korea has fired some ballistic missiles, supposedly testing, you know, just supposedly test, but they violated NATO treaty, I think it was a NATO treaty, and came really close to Japan. And so Japan is now involved, and, you know, Japan is our ally, and they're up in arms over what China's doing there, because they also have claims in the dispute over the islands. So, I mean, it's just a big mess.
It really is. And nobody takes North Korea seriously, because, I mean, when aren't they, like, declaring war or declaring that they're going to do something crazy and that they're going to do this and that. So, I mean, you know, North Korea has become really the country who cries wolf, like, all the time. So no one takes them seriously, but I mean...
but if China acts, I mean, if the U.S. provokes China into actually acting aggressively, which it seems to be intent on doing, I think North Korea would be much more willing to finally act on those threats.
Definitely. And one thing that could definitely happen is China uses North Korea as its proxy, you know, and China could easily get North Korea to do its bidding, to do something for it, to provoke some kind of reaction, and, you know, who knows where that will go from there. So looking at the region, one of the big disputes going on, I think it's in the Spratly Islands between, this is where China and the Philippines have a big dispute, and as we all know, the Philippines has been for a long time kind of an extension of the United States. It's not quite like a 51st state, but it's pretty close. You know, the United States has a huge military presence there. For those that aren't aware, I mean, we quote-unquote liberated the Philippines from Japan during World War II. But, you know, the United States was in the Philippines before World War II. They were fought out, and then they retook it. And ever since then, they've had a very strong military presence in the Philippines. And there's, like, some kind of... They've got, like, a deal with the Philippines where, like, the Filipinos can join the U.S. Navy. I mean, very strong naval presence out there. So the latest dispute has been between the Philippines and China, and there was a recent ruling at The Hague that favored the Philippines, but China had basically already said that they were going to – that they didn't – no matter what the finding was at The Hague, that they weren't going to take it legitimately and that they'd have legitimate – claim to those islands. Now, one thing that is interesting is that there is a lot of natural resources underneath these islands that everybody's over there fighting about. They recently discovered huge gas reserves underneath these islands, so it's not all of a sudden, you know, these islands weren't a huge deal. I mean, yeah, they had territorial disputes for a long time. Who got to claim them? Whose were they? Who, you know, how were they going to split them up? But now that they found this huge gas reserve underneath these islands, all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, we got to go, you know, maintain our right to free passage between these islands. And, you know, it's all of a sudden oil is found, and it's like, okay, now all this, now we're really serious about these islands. And, you know, what many people may not know if they're not following Asian politics, the Philippines has a new president. Many have called him the Filipino Donald Trump, but this guy is very much an authoritarian. It's been making some headlines recently because he basically gave the green light to just kill anyone suspected of using drugs extrajudicially. Now, hundreds of people, and I think it's probably into the thousands by now, have been killed in the Philippines.
Over 1,800.
1,800 people killed in the Philippines because they're suspected of selling drugs. So, I mean, this guy is, he has a nickname, but he was a mayor, I think, of a city. And he has, like, death squads going around and just killing who they say are criminals. Anyone suspected of being an organized crime, they literally just kill them in the streets. They don't take them in. They don't give them a trial. So the Philippines is heading in a direction of authoritarianism, and just the most recent headline out of the Philippines was about how Duterte, I think that's his name, basically said, screw the UN. He's like, if they don't like what we're doing, killing people that we say are drug dealers, then screw them, we'll get out of the UN. So that was like the latest headline. Now the other thing going on, and this is not being reported really at all, I ran into an article the other day about this, but in Japan, now you may recall that Japan recently announced that it was going to, for the first time since World War II, start building up a military. Because Japan, under imposed U.S. Constitution that it has, it's like a completely demilitarized country. It's not allowed to have an army. It has a navy, but they're not really militarized. That's all about to change. Japan is about to become a militaristic country again, and in fact, their prime minister recently announced that they'd be willing to start using their military offensively, not even defensively, but using it preemptively. And Japan also announced that it'd be willing to start joining in the U.S.'s wars, be it in Syria or in other places where the U.S. has conflicts. Japan is now saying that they'd be willing to get involved. And the U.S., you know, historically the U.S. would never allow this to happen. But now that we're starting to see China as the growing threat to the world, to, you know, the world order, however you want to call it, I think the U.S. is kind of encouraging Japan to remilitarize, to start building up, to start, you know, getting a standing army, militarizing its navy, and that kind of thing, because the U.S. probably sees Japan and the Philippines as the two greatest checks to the Chinese naval strategy, you know. And that to me is something that is going on here, and it's going to be developing in the next 5-10 years as, you know, first of all, you know, the government of the Philippines becomes more authoritarian, and the government of Japan becomes more militaristic. I mean, these are things that are going to have major geopolitical consequences in the future when it comes to dealing with China. And as we all know, we talked about the TPP last week, and how the TPP is really also part of this plan to isolate China economically and really give Western countries and, you know, at least Western allied countries the leverage that it needs over top of China. So according to everything that's going on right now geopolitically, it looks like the United States and NATO is trying to isolate Russia and China and really, you know, encircle them and kind of get a clamp down on them and then have leverage over top of them. And that's what's going on. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that we did against Japan, ironically, during World War II, and that's what kind of led to them lashing out and doing what happened in Pearl Harbor. You know, so we have to be really careful and pay close attention to what the U.S. does in the South China Sea, because if they get too aggressive with their economic policy of containment, on China. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if China lashed out and did some offensive military actions over there. You know, and that to me is what's really concerning.
I think that's equally concerning, though, is the fact that now all of these major players are present in Syria at the same time. China has agreed to basically back Russia and Assad, I mean, essentially, in Syria. And it just, it's like a hotbed of proxy war getting ready to take place. And that's why I keep looking to Syria thinking that could be like where everything actually pops off, if you will. I mean, if one player there makes a wrong move or a mistake or gets a little too aggressive, somebody's going to take it the wrong way, and I think, you know, shit'll hit the fan somehow.
So, Claire, why do you think, and I want DB to answer this as well, why do you think China, I mean, from the outside looking in, you know, looking at the surface level, China doesn't seem like it has much, you know, much to gain from joining the alliance, the Russian alliance in Syria. Why do you think they're joining up in this?
I believe it's just to kind of solidify the alliance with Russia elsewhere. Like, I think Syria is kind of a subplot of what's actually playing out in the South China Sea. And if China goes in and backs Russia in Syria, then Russia would be more likely to back China in the you know, the island disputes than against the U.S. I just think it's a solidification of that whole kind of we got your back sort of thing.
DB, are you there? I want to know what you think about this whole situation with China joining up in the alliance in Syria.
Yeah, I mean, China's been infiltrated by Russia and Russian secret services since right after World War II, when they unsuccessfully tried to take over Manchuria when Japan was retreating. So, yeah, there's really two players in the world. A lot of people don't know this, but Japan basically owns most of the financial world by the balls. If you look into the Nikkei or whatever, the index over there, it kind of controls everything. It's the real Wall Street. It's just unknown. And then you have Saudi Arabia, which makes us do whatever they want. So we're kind of their bitch in that way because of the fact that we rely on them to run our war machine. So, yeah, Japan getting its army and its navy and its air force up to modern standards will happen overnight. You can be sure of that. And it's because
Japan's already got probably the most modernized manufacturing economy in the world.
They're eons ahead of us. So you have to understand that where our military is where their consumer is in a lot of ways. Like, they're very, very far ahead of us, and they can shift to a military production capacity overnight. And people need to really look up World War II and realize, like, it was more of a draw. We sued them for peace in 52. That was the official end of the war we did. We sued them. So the bombs didn't make some kind of peace happen. Like, we kept fighting. People don't understand the Korean War really was World War II and a half, and we lost. So, I mean, there's just so many connotations to it. China's kind of like this last wild card, and Russia, like Claire said, absolutely has their back, because without them, they would have already been invaded. The only thing keeping Russia and China kind of their own countries and not swallowed up into this NWO that's on the horizon is the fact that together they're way too much of a headache to try to take on.
Interesting. You know, I'm looking at Syria as, you know, and we've talked about this so many times, and this is just something that is literally untouched by the mainstream media, because they'll never talk about the truly underlying geopolitical issues going on in Syria. You know, as far as the average media consumer knows, you know, we're in Syria because we're fighting for human rights, right? We're there because Assad's a bad guy, and secondly, because we got to fight ISIS. Now, the truth of the matter is the United States, in its policies both in Iraq and in its intentional destabilization of any Ba'athist, quote-unquote Ba'athist nationalist country, which is basically the very similar government to what Saddam Hussein ran in Iraq, which is very similar to what Bashar al-Assad runs in Syria, the U.S. has been trying to knock out these Ba'athist nationalist governments for a couple decades now, since the 90s. There's been a plan in place called the Wormser Plan, which is this neocon plan that they've been trying to do. It includes trying to take out Iran, Syria, Iraq. I mean, they've already done Iraq. They need to take out Syria, and then the next they jump over to Iran. But, you know, the U.S. really is over there to carry out this plan. The ISIS is kind of an outgrowth that became uncontrollable of this plan. I do think the U.S. genuinely is, quote-unquote, bombing ISIS over there. I don't think they're doing it very effectively. I think Russia has actually been more effective with taking out their assets and stuff like that. But, you know, ISIS really is an outgrowth of U.S. policies over there, which, you know, the end goal was to take out Assad and to topple the government. looking deeper, though, you know, why? You look at the fact that Assad and the Syrian government is really the only thing getting in the way of knocking Russia out of the European natural resource marketplace. And right now, Russia controls roughly 40% of Europe's natural resource imports. And so that's a huge part of Russia's economy. And if we're talking about if the United States has a policy of isolating Russia or trying to contain Russia or trying to, you know, just cut their legs out from under them, which is obviously what has been trying to, you know, what these people have been trying to do, well, then obviously you got to take out Assad because that's the only land route that they could run the pipelines that would replace the Russian pipelines. They have to go through from the Sunni states, which would be like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates. They have to run up through Syria into Turkey, and from Turkey the gas would be distributed to Europe. As of right now, as I mentioned, Russia is kind of it really has that market by the balls. And if the Syrian government stays in place, well, then that's how the order is going to stay. If the United States could knock out the Syrian government, well, then that shakes up the entire order over there in Europe and who supplies and who makes all the money for Europe. And if the United States and, as DB mentioned, Saudi Arabia gets their way, well, then they're going to be getting all that money that is right now going to Russia. It's going to go to Saudi Arabia, to the United Arab Emirates, to Qatar. And that's what this whole thing really, truly is about. And that's the part of the story that the media is never going to talk about because they don't want to tell us that we're over there bombing children or you know, funding rebels in Aleppo where children are being bombed for oil. They're not going to tell us that. They're going to tell us we're over there protecting human rights and spreading democracy into Syria. As we all know, why would we be allying with Saudi Arabia to spread democracy into Syria when Saudi Arabia itself is not a democracy? It's a theocracy. It's a monarchy. So that, you know, that whole thing is just bogus. It's all a bunch of nonsense. I mean, it's just like the same thing about us spreading, liberating Iraq from the horrible dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. I mean, that was fiction. It wasn't true. I mean, we didn't liberate Iraq. We destroyed it. We messed it up. Now it's irreparable. It's a really bad place now, and really that's what led to the outgrowth of ISIS. So not a good situation. And, you know, I think this is why China is joining up in this fight in Syria. It's to help protect Russia's, you know, hegemony over the natural resources over there because, as we mentioned, you know, Russia and China, they have been allies, not allies, but they've been close for a long time. And now the U.S. NATO policies have been pushing them closer and closer together. Plenty of recent announcements of bilateral trade agreements and stuff between China and Russia. They've been deepening their ties, whether it's Russia supplying China with natural resources, China supplying Russia with manufactured goods and that kind of thing. They're trading a lot. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was some kind of formal military alliance going on very soon. But this is why China is throwing its hat in the ring in Syria. It doesn't have much to win over there. It doesn't have much, you know, there's not much that it's looking out for in its own interest, but it's looking out for its buddy, which is Russia. And as well as Iran, who supplies with China with a lot of oil, a lot of gas. So, you know, everybody knows that Iran is a very, very close ally to Syria. In fact, Iran is probably their closest ally. And, you know, so China's looking out for all of its trade agreements and its partnerships for its natural gas, because that's one thing that China is lacking. China has a lot of natural resources and stuff, but it doesn't have much oil or much gas that we know of or that has been discovered yet. And that's the other reason why they're also fighting for those islands, because those islands is where, you know, where there's a bunch of natural gas under the water there. So, you know, China is playing its cards for the natural resources, for the gas, for the oil that it's going to need if some kind of war pops off, you know, and so this is what we need to be paying attention to. They're not just going to Syria because they think it's cool or they because of some inconsequential reason. They're going there because it's going to benefit them strategically in the long run. And I think what China's trying to do is protect its oil and protect its partners that trade its oil to them, you know. And so that's very complicated situation over there. It's not, you know, black and white. It's not, oh, we're fighting for freedom and they're fighting for tyranny. Nothing like that. I mean, both sides over here are fighting for resources, geopolitical, you know, resources, and to get the upper hand in the power struggle, the worldwide power struggle. And that's what it's all about. And unfortunately, all these poor children, all these innocent people are caught in the mix. And, you know, we posted our promo meme for the show tonight, and it was a picture of just some American kid. On the top it says, while American parents choose an outfit for their child to wear on the first day of school, Syrian parents choose to stay in their country, and it's a picture of that kid in Aleppo that, you know, got trapped in that bombing, and he was put in that ambulance, and he's all covered in dust and blood. Or leave, and it's the kid, the Kurdi kid that drowned off the coast of Turkey, a refugee trying to flee. And the top comment, and I can't believe this shit, that's their effing problem. We have our own shit here to worry about. It's sad bringing in refugees. It's sad, but bringing in refugees is bullshit. There's countries that are closer that can take care of them. F you, anti-media. That's the top comment. And, you know, unfortunately, this guy that made this comment probably never listens to this radio show, because he would probably know that it's not their problem. It's a problem that we're helping to create. We are funding the entire opposition in Syria. We are extending that civil war. It would have been over in a couple of months. It would have been an uprising. I mean, let's look at the other uprisings during the Arab Spring, especially looking at our allies like in Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and these other places that have theocratic or, you know, kind of authoritarian governments. The uprisings only lasted a couple months. The government forcefully put them down, heavy-handedly killed people, jailed people. Our allies did that. Assad was doing that as well. And it would have been over in a few months. You don't see 300,000 people right now dead in United Arab Emirates, do you? You don't see 6 million refugees from United Arab Emirates, do you? I mean, as bad as it is, and I don't agree with authoritarian government, I don't agree with theocracy, but the United States is the one propping up that civil war in Syria. We're making it last a much longer than it should have been. Should have been over in a few months. Maybe a couple thousand people dead, no refugees. But now we've created this huge, huge problem. And it plays in not only to the fears of people with the refugees, and everybody's worried about ISIS, and everyone's like super callous about the refugees, and, oh, just let them stay and fight. Why are all the men leaving? I mean, people were evacuating out of Ferguson when the unrest were going there, instead of staying and, you know, quote unquote fighting and protecting your home.
People here won't even fight, and we're armed.
Yeah, dude. And it's like, well, what are you going to say to people in Ferguson? Why don't you stay, or not in Ferguson, down in Louisiana? Why don't you stay and fight the water? You know, I mean, no, people, if your home gets destroyed, you got to go somewhere else, don't you? You know, and so the refugee crisis going on, most of it is coming out of Syria. A lot of it's coming out of North Africa, Libya, another place that we toppled the government in. A lot of the refugee crisis has been made by the United States, NATO, and our allies. We created this mess, and it's up to us to stop creating this mess. And that's the thing that people don't get. I mean, refugee crises don't just happen out of nowhere. I mean, you know, many times they're caused by, you know, acts of nature, natural disasters, and things like that. But, you know, other times they're caused by wars, you know, and the current one going on, which has been the worst since like World War II, it's being caused by us. And of course, Russia has a role to play in it as well, and a bunch of other players. And now, as we mentioned, China's getting involved. But we're on the hook for this one. We did it. You know, it's not something I'm proud of. It's blood on all of our hands. Anyone that pays taxes in this country, anyone that lives in the United States, whether documented or undocumented, you pay taxes directly or indirectly. This blood's on our hands. And it's really sad to see people just like, oh, well, it's their problem. Have them stay there. Why are they running? These are children, man. Children and people that aren't able to fight are dying and having to flee their homes. It's just...
What that tells me, Nick, is when the shit does hit the fan, we're going to have a lot of crybabies who are just going to bite the dust.
Exactly.
Oh, man. It's just ridiculous, dude. I can't believe these people, dude. I really can't. They're just so ignorant to what's going on. Like, they believe everything they're being told about this war in Syria, I guess. It's not what we've been told.
It's the same thing. I mean, it's the Iraq, it's Al-Qaeda repeated all over again. I don't understand why people do not understand that within a decade they've been, you know, basically tricked into switching terror groups. Like, they replaced Al-Qaeda with ISIS, and no one seems to realize it. And they did it to wage a new war. I mean, am I crazy or
ISIS is funded by the CIA, and the money trail it went through the Clinton Foundation,
right,
through Benghazi. So we have a nest of vipers at the top. I mean, I'm sure the military is doing whatever they can, but what can they really do? Can they do what Turkey just did and just have some fake ceremonial military uprising and clean out all the people in the rank and file that don't go along with a tyrannical government? Because that's kind of what's getting set up.
I don't know, man, but shit's going to go down in this next half century because there's too many variable factors that are going to come head to head with this, you know, quote unquote new world order. Yeah, you know, hackers and artificial intelligence are just going to change everything. I'll go down on record saying that that's what's gonna shake everything up.
And hacking is already shaking things up.
Right. Yeah.
And for the first time, we're seeing kind of weaponized. Not for the first time, I guess, because the U.S. has done this against Russia before, especially during the USSR, where the NSA would intercept information and then it would make that information public to a lot of these USSR kind of the smaller countries within the USSR. But you know, for the first time going against the United States, we're seeing how Russian intelligence agencies are able to intercept our own corruption. And, you know, like possibly what happened with the DNC leak. That's not a for sure, but you know, if that happened, the Russian intelligence is able to intercept our own communications, find out the corruption, and then weaponize it by giving it to WikiLeaks.
They did hack her, but it was an internal guy, and he got killed for it. And it's being shown now where the source is coming from. I mean, Assange is going to release who the source is the final thing he said in October, which is going to end up being the staffer who was shot in a drive-by in D.C. I can't remember his name.
So creepy.
Seth Rich.
There you go.
Yeah. So yeah, it was an internal, man. And the thing is, Russia and China have been hacking Hillary because Hillary's a mole. I mean, she is. You don't use an open server if your best interests are this country.
Very irresponsible. And that's the person that's going to be probably the next president. Very scary prospect.
Yay!
Hey, those drones are going to be painted in like hippie colors and like tie-dye. The bombs are going to be tie-dye. Because Hillary's bombs are much nicer than Trump's bombs.
Yeah, it'll be like Apocalypse Now when the planes are coming in. Everyone will yell, the liberals are coming.
Don't you know those bombs just spread feminism, Nick? That's all they do.
There you go. Feminist bombs. DB, I'm glad you brought up Turkey because a lot's going on in Turkey. We know the recent coup attempt or counter coup attempt. Many people have said it was that Erdogan faked the coup in order to
house clean
down on opposition. Other people within the Turkish government accused the U.S. of being behind the coup. We don't know for sure what happened. We do know the reaction that's going on. As you mentioned, major purge going on in Turkey. They've locked up or detained or fired, like, I think it was up to like almost 60,000 people at this point. A lot of, keep in mind, not all of them were arrested. A lot of them were just fired from their positions. they're shutting down schools, they're shutting down media outlets, you know, major purge going on. And think about this, too. A couple months leading up to the coup, Erdogan was actually quoted as kind of praising Hitler and praising some of his policies. And keep in mind, Hitler pulled off one of the most famous false flags in history at the Reichstag, where they set the – I guess the Reichstag was pretty much their parliament building on fire, and then they blamed it on the communists, and they used it as an excuse to crack down on dissenters. You know, so Erdogan recently was quoted – kind of praising Hitler in certain ways. And then, you know, you got this, what many have called a fake coup attempt. And then he kind of went and did the purge. He made an excuse to crack down on the Gulenites. So, you know, very interesting thing. But something to think about, and I've seen plenty of speculation on this, Turkey seems to be looking to warm ties with Russia. And now this goes back to what Claire was talking about with Ukraine. Because you may or may not be aware, Ukraine is the hub for the pipelines for Russia. And then we talked about Syria and why Syria is so strategic for Russia, because if they lose Syria, they lose their pipeline monopoly into Europe. Now Ukraine is where most of those pipelines go through from Russia into Europe, and you know, we know that there was a recent revolution in Ukraine. Many people have accused the State Department of being behind that, and I pretty much agree with that from the evidence that I've seen. The United States was definitely helped manufacture or foment that revolution over there, and the U.S. and the government in Ukraine right now is U.S. backed. In fact, we've been sending them weapons, arms. We've been sending in advisors and special ops into Ukraine to help them fight against Russia. So, I mean, that's pretty obvious what's going on there. So now that Russia has kind of lost Ukraine, that's where their pipelines go through. Their other plan for a pipeline was to go through Turkey. And that plan is still on the table. And that may be what's going on with Erdogan and Russia right now, because Erdogan may see maybe he's saying, OK, we're never going to win this thing in Syria. Russia's never going to let us knock out that government. So maybe Erdogan is giving up on his plan of toppling Assad and you know, getting that deal with Saudi Arabia with that pipeline and him becoming the hub for Europe and saying, hey, Russia, you know, you lost Ukraine. Why not send your pipeline through us?
I have a theory. I have a theory on what Erdogan's actually doing, and I'm fairly convinced this is correct. I think that it's a mutually advantageous sort of relationship between the two, and I think that Erdogan might be gunning to become the next BRICS member. I mean, it just makes perfect sense because he would be able to maneuver that, considering his geography, the advantage he has there. I mean, this would be a done deal. And you know, Turkey's been acting often in opposition to NATO and other Western nations, so it makes sense that maybe that aversion has grown too deep, and that's what he really wants.
That's very interesting because, you know, all the stuff we've been talking about tonight kind of goes back to, like, commerce routes, right? South China Sea is like the shipping lane of the world. Turkey is like the land bridge that connects Europe to Asia, and that's why Turkey, it's been that landmass, it hasn't always been called Turkey. I mean, looking back during the Roman Empire, it was a major part of the Roman Empire. When the Roman Empire split apart, you know, there was the East and the West Roman Empire. The Eastern Empire was the capital was in Constantinople, which is Istanbul today. You know, it's pretty much one of the most geostrategic places on Earth. And, you know, Turkey sits on this place, and it really is the land bridge that connects Asia to China. I mean, very much, you know, this is where all the pipelines have to go through if they're going to go over land. And so Turkey is very, very strategic, and it carries a lot of leverage. That's why it's a NATO member. That's why it was easily accepted into NATO, because it's just so strategic to have them as part of their alliance. But it looks more and more like Turkey is drifting away from NATO because they probably feel like they've been played as pawns in the grander scheme of things, and you know, I wouldn't doubt that they have been. And, you know, Turkey has really, for a long time, been the conduit of jihadists where, you know, that they've been pushing into Syria to try to overthrow Assad. And now that Turkey is seeing that that's not really panning out the way it had hoped, maybe it's reevaluating its situation. And as you said, Claire, I think that's a decent theory that it could be trying to get closer to Russia and China and get back into the, get, you know, become part of the BRICS nations, which is, BRICS is basically an alliance between Brazil, Russia, India, China, and I think South America, right?
South Africa, actually.
South Africa. That's what I meant. So yeah, that's a pretty interesting theory, but yeah, Turkey has become a wild card, and so we're gonna have to see how all that stuff plays out because it's.
You know what that purge did, Nick? Is it cleaned out something like 18,000 of their rank and file military guys. So now they're having a whole big propaganda to push for all the youth to fill those spots and build up the military even bigger than it was before. I mean, it's textbook.
And also, for the longest time, Turkey, it kind of had a government sector, and then it had the military sector, and they were kind of two independent wings. And there's been a bunch of coup attempts and successful coups in Turkey, and ever since its modern constitution, the military has overthrown the government several times and then reinstituted like a new government. But now, what's gone on after this, you know, failed coup attempt? Is Erdogan has pretty much brought the military under the wing of the government, and that's pretty much the first time that's happened in Turkey in a really long time. So now Erdogan is quickly becoming probably one of the most powerful people in Eurasia. I mean, Turkey kind of – some people consider Turkey part of Europe. Some people consider it part of, you know, Asia Minor, and some people consider it part of the Middle East. It's kind of part of all of those things. But Turkey,
just remember, it was the Ottoman Empire at one point, and it was like the third most powerful nation in the world at one point.
Exactly, and they've still got those ambitions, you know. And so Turkey may very well become part of this new axis, the Eastern Bloc, which is pretty obviously become, you know, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. Maybe Turkey winds up falling into this bloc. So you know, that'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. But, you know, this is something that is not being addressed by the political candidates, and it won't be addressed really, in not in an in-depth way, because no matter who gets into office, these kind of geopolitical themes are going to keep playing out, because it's not really up to the president to decide on what's going to happen over there. I mean, there's a big, giant military-industrial complex, or the deep state, whatever you want to call it. There's a big, you know, huge global financial interests that are, you know, trying to get the upper hand over there in that region. And really 1984-ish, you know, really, really just perpetual war, proxy wars going on over there. But as we were talking about earlier, I mean, this has the potential to become a big hot war. And it's not going to be very nice, especially now that women can be drafted into the army. You know, if something big pops off, it's not going to be pretty. And for the first time, there are legitimate powers that can challenge the United States ever since World War II. I mean, no one could really do it.
Well, Nick, if what people need to understand is, like, in a real war of this scale of what we have now, it's going to make World War II look like nothing. And it's going to make large-scale deaths. And if there's a lot of young women that are fighting in the battlefield and dying, like, you can see what happens when not enough people have the 2.1 or 2.2 kids that a nation needs. We could, like, demographically die from a big war. I mean, Russia's basically demographically dead. They're in a negative for growth.
Yeah. You know, and that would be catastrophic economically, too. And that's one of the two countries that are, you know, contentious right here with the stuff we're talking about, are dealing with that. Both Russia and Japan are dealing with population deflation, and it's seriously harmed their, you know, their economy. In fact, I think both countries have offered, like, financial incentive to have kids, like a huge incentive. Not like here in the U.S. where you get like tax breaks and stuff, but like they pay you to have kids over there because it's become that big of a problem. And yeah, I mean, we start putting, you know, men and women on the front lines to go die in mass for these resource wars. It's not something that's going to be very popular in the United States. I mean, putting boots on the ground is already kind of political suicide. I mean, I guess Obama gets away with it, but
we would not win this. Not only would we not win the whole, I mean, everything would be obliterated. This country is already so divided. It's kind of, it's insane to think about. You have states talking about secession, like actively, very seriously this time around with this election, and you know, we push for a war that we're basically being aggressively, we're aggressively trying to start this like nuclear war with all these countries. Nobody's going to back this. Like, a lot of the people I think here will be too disillusioned to back it. They're, regardless of the draft, people are going to, I just see mass chaos. It's not going to, it's a fatal move. I don't understand why it is that we're insisting on doing all this. But there it is nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, what are they going to do? Send convince kids to join the army to go play Pokemon overseas? I mean,
well, if they can get the cops to do the craziest shit like they're doing now with impunity, they will get him to just come summarily execute the first person that says, I'm not fighting, and make the example.
But, I mean, the kids in the U.S. nowadays...
Well, they'll put them in drone trailers, man. I mean, but they're gonna serve.
Nick, you just gave me an idea, which is that this is gonna turn into Ender's Game, which is that they're gonna trick a bunch of kids into thinking they're playing like Pokemon Go, some augmented reality thing, but they'll actually be killing people.
That's actually what Pokemon Go is right now.
Yeah, every time you play Pokemon Go, you're putting Harambe into a cage. It's really sad.
I didn't think. I mean, it really did kind of pop up. I mean, I thought it was exaggerated how much it's going on, but literally every day I walk around and there's kids looking just very suspiciously weird, and I'll say, "Are you guys playing Pokemon Go?" And they'll go, "Yeah."
I've noticed a sharp drop off in Pokemon Go players out where I normally, you know, at the beach and stuff. That when it first came out, it was just like Pokemon Go players everywhere staring at their phones. It was pretty annoying. But I was kind of joking about that Pokemon Go recruitment tool, but it's actually real. There's a viral Facebook post that was a Navy recruitment poster.
What?
And it says, "Do you like playing Pokemon Go? Would you like to play Pokemon Go around the world? The United States Navy has the ability to take you around the world, allow you to play Pokemon Go, and help you achieve the goal of being a Pokemon master."
Oh my
Come
god.
Come to your local Navy recruiter today and see what the Navy can offer you. So I was kind of joking, but I kind of wasn't. I mean, this is really going on already.
Claire's right.
When life imitates satire.
Claire's right on her Facebook page when she says Orwell understated things a bit.
Yeah, and on that topic, I mean, this guy, the director for Idiocracy, now we know the writer spoke out not too long ago, and he's like, I never thought this was going to become a documentary. Now the director is speaking out, and let me pull the quote out here. 3 or 4 years ago, I started getting comments about it, people discovering it, and it just keeps building. Now every other Twitter comment I get is about Idiocracy and how it's become a documentary now. At first I was just thinking, yeah, that's nice to hear, but then very specific things like Carl's Jr. announcing that they were going to have a completely robotic non-employee store, and Carl's Jr. is in the movie. Then there's this thing called Fellatio Cafe in Switzerland. I'm sure you guys heard about this, where you get blowjobs with coffee. And we had Starbucks thing in there. He's talking about how at Starbucks in Idiocracy you could get a hand job while you're waiting for your coffee. I mean,
I heard you get great way to end on in jail too.
WWF. I mean, Donald Trump. I mean, Kamaka was a former retired wrestler. Right? Come on.
Always end the show with blowjobs at Starbucks.
No.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
My name is...